moxie, force of character, determination, or nerve. I'm Sierra Benson, and you're listening to The Moxie Mindset. This podcast is designed to help you grow a healthier, growth-oriented mindset. I've reached out to college professors and professionals who have agreed to come into the studio to help us learn more in depth about the communication and leadership skills we need to succeed. Thank you for joining us on The Moxie Mindset. I'm super stoked for today's episode. Joseph Ward is the Dean of the College of Humanities and Social Sciences. Prior to joining Utah State University in 2016, he was a professor and chair of history at the University of Mississippi. A specialist in the society and culture of England during the 16th and 17th centuries, Ward has published more than a dozen journal articles and book chapters, and he is an author or editor of 8 books, including Culture, Faith and Philanthropy, Londoners and Provincial Reform in Early Modern England. Thanks for coming in, Dean Ward. I know you prefer Joe, and I really appreciate that about CHASS especially, is that we have this thing about titles that I've noticed that we like to be really personal, and I've really appreciated that people in CHASS like yourself are so personable and want to come into the studio and talk one-on-one with these things. So thank you. Tell us a little about yourself. What's your background? Where are you from? What made you come into this position?
So first of all, Sierra, it's great to be here with you. Thank you for the opportunity to talk a little bit about leadership from the perspective of an academic dean. I'm originally from Massachusetts, and I've had the great privilege of living in different parts of the U.S. and also for a while living in England. And so I've learned a lot just from being with different people in different spots. And I've been here in the Mountain West since the summer of 2016. So coming up on 5 years, and I just love it here. I really like being outdoors, and I'm still reaching for my phone to take pictures of snow on the mountains. It's still just so beautiful to see. I know for folks who grew up here, maybe it becomes wallpaper after a while, but I just find it spectacular, and it's hard to feel down when you live in a place that's so gorgeous.
Yeah. I can attest to that. Moving to Logan is an experience in itself, just having those mountains around you every day, having a beautiful sunrise every day. Is that what attracted you to Utah State initially?
No, it was the opportunity to be a dean. I'd been the chair of the history department at the University of Mississippi for almost 10 years. And I felt like I was ready for a new opportunity to grow. When I was contacted and encouraged to apply for this job, I started looking at it, and I thought it would be just a wonderful chance to do something new in a part of the country I hadn't lived in before. And so it was just attractive for a number of reasons. But I came here to be the dean.
Nice. That's awesome. And you've done a great job so far. I can attest to that. How have you adjusted to that role going into a new spot, a new location, a new position?
I think it's been, for me personally, a real advantage to come from the outside, because it meant I had to learn by listening. And I think as a dean, as a person who's trying to advance the college and all of its different facets, coming in from the outside, really, it gave me those opportunities to get to know folks, right? Because I was new, because I hadn't worked with them previously. Now, there are plenty of deans who've come from the faculty and they've been super successful. So I'm not saying that there's one way that's inherently better than the other, but for me, personally, I think that process of really listening has been important for my ability to try to move the college forward.
Ooh, I love that. I've noticed that a lot of the times people, they listen to respond. They listen to try to figure each other out and fix each other's problems. But I can tell that you've gotten a different sense of listening to understand. How have you started to cultivate that? Because I know that you didn't magically become a dean and then you could understand everyone just through listening to them.
Well, the faculty in our college, I mean, is just tremendous. And there are wonderful ideas all over the place. And so I'm really comfortable in my role because I'm largely a helper. And so as I learn and understand where the faculty are coming from and the students as well, over time, you know, and I'm now in my fifth year, I can begin to feel confident. Okay, here's an idea that we can really move on now. Here's an idea that maybe we can collaborate with someone else to build some momentum over the next couple of years. Here's an idea that is more in the realm of strategy. It's like a longer term process. And so being able to work at those different levels and seeing how each person can make a contribution, you know, one way or the other, I think that's, for me, been the most sort of hopeful aspect of what I do because, I mean, again, our faculty, they know the landscape. They know that we have resource limitations. And so as I work with them, as I listen to their ideas, it's almost like the potential solutions built in to the proposal, right? Because we have to find new resources if we want to do new things. And so if your idea is going to bring in more students, or if your idea is going to potentially bring in an external grant from a foundation or a government agency, or maybe your idea is really aligned with something that the legislature in Utah is focused on. So maybe we can try to get some funding there. So I'm a facilitator, right? I'm a helper, and I'm trying to connect people's ideas with the resources that may be available.
I really like that. I really like that insight of connecting people to those resources and finding out how to do that in the most effective way. How have you navigated the obstacles that come with that? I know that it's really nice to like have a proposal and be like, this is the solution. It's that way all the time with goals that I make. And then you're in the process and it's like, oh no, this came up. I don't know how to navigate this, but we're going to figure it out.
Well, I think for starters, looking at all of these different possible initiatives as collaborations. So I really don't experience these conversations as being ones in which someone comes to me and expects me somehow to come up with the answer, right? If we come up with answers together, I think, first of all, they're more likely to be successful, but it also takes some of the stress out of it for any of us individually. I sometimes talk about academic administrative roles, whether it's department head or associate dean or dean. It's like we're on a team. You know, I grew up playing sports and sports interests me, but we're a team, or we're a group gonna do a theatrical performance, right? You've got a group of people who are coming together with a common goal, and different individuals can contribute in different ways. If we're gonna do a theatrical performance, well, you know, somebody's gonna have this role, somebody's gonna have this other role, someone's gonna be in the chorus, someone's gonna be doing the lighting, someone's gonna be the logistics behind the scenes, someone's going to be the director, right? So because you go into it recognizing there are different roles, different parts, but all of them are essential if the performance is going to work, right? Same thing in a team. You've got a common goal, which is to perform at your highest level, but different folks have different roles to play, and there's room for everybody. So I see in the leadership in an academic context as working with folks on our common goals and working in a way that's really collaborative and not we're looking for individuals to somehow solve the problems by themselves.
That is a really good insight. And with all those different roles, there's always different strengths that each person brings to them. How have you noticed, as you've been here and you're starting to look really long term, finding the right people to fit the right roles?
Yeah, it's a process of give and take and of observation. So, you know, each year faculty and staff and deans go through a review process, right? So I went through my review process recently with the provost, Provost Gailey. Faculty members work with the department heads. Staff members work with their supervisors. And so that review process is extremely valuable because you can reflect on the last year, how did it go, and then set goals for the year ahead. And in that conversation, you begin to say, all right, you know, what resources do you need to reach your goal? And if you reach your goal, you're going to be making a contribution to the larger goal that we have for the department or the college or the university. So I think it's crucial to check in and really, frankly, more than once a year. Now, once a year, we have a kind of formal review process, but it's good to check in every now and then along the way. How's it going? Because sometimes you have to adjust your plan mid-course because something unexpected happened. It could be an unexpected challenge. It could be an unexpected opportunity. But to have that roadmap, right, to have that plan, I think that helps everybody to find how they can make their contribution.
Oh, that's so good. How have you found specific questions in those reviews to help you align to those goals?
It's a give and take process,
mm-hmm.
right? So sometimes you'll have a faculty member or staff member who, as a result of filling their role for a period of time, begins to realize themselves, you know, for me to be successful, I need some additional training. Or, you know, I've been doing this role in everyone acknowledges I've been in this role well for a while, but I want to grow. I'm looking for new opportunities. And so can you over the next year put me in a slightly different position, right? So I've enjoyed being in the chorus, but, you know, I'd like to have a more prominent role in the next play that we do.
Mm-hmm.
What will I need to do to be competitive to do that situation? So the individual has goals for himself, herself. The unit has goals it wants to accomplish, but that doesn't mean that the individuals have to always be in the same spot. And so if we can learn to cultivate the individual, to help the individual to grow in ways that he or she wants to, and that involves resources, training, go to a conference, go to a workshop, do a webinar, then over time, we begin to discover, you know, some of these folks we have are interested in developing their potential further. Well, if they develop their potential, then that's going to increase the potential of our unit, right? So we identify, look, there's a role that we need filled. Do we try to bring someone from the outside to fill that role, or do we see if any of the people currently with us might be able to move in that direction? So it's a give and take process. The individual has goals, the unit has goals, and we try to manage that.
I'm loving the metaphor of the chorus and the play itself. And I know with those different trainings, it affects people differently. How have you personally found different resources to help you grow in your goals?
Well, you know, as a dean, I first of all looked to other deans for mentoring. When I arrived at USU, there were several deans who'd been in place for quite a few years who were great. I mean, I'd go and we'd have lunch or coffee and we'd just sort of talk and I'd ask them questions and seek advice. I've also had a series of provosts. So deans report to the provost, who's the chief academic officer. So when I first joined USU, President Cockett was the provost. So she was fantastic, as you can imagine. I mean, she knows this place inside and out. And then Larry Smith, who'd been an associate provost, became interim provost. And then now we have Provost Gailey, who came in from the University of Wyoming, where he was a dean for many, many years, very successful. And so I've had supervisors, right, my provosts, who have been very open in offering me advice, right, and answering my questions and in giving me opportunities to grow. But I've also had other deans I've relied on quite a bit. So what's weird for me is now we've had some deans step out, and I'm going to be one of the more senior deans. And so I'm trying to do what I can to help the other deans as well.
Hmm. Oh, I love the idea of mentorships, and I know it gets really encouraged when you're in college, but I also know that I'm about to step out of college, I'm about to graduate, and finding mentors in a different world than academia or even just in real life, how do you approach that? How do you start and initiate that mentorship?
It's really important. I'm glad you raised that issue. Mentorship, I look back across my career, and if I've achieved anything, it's been because of the advice I've received and support I received from mentors along the way. I think that sometimes young people, when they're starting their careers, they look at people who are in that career path and really, really successful. And it just seems intimidating and scary. So I think it's really crucial for students to understand nobody is successful without a lot of help. It rarely do folks make it very far without a tremendous amount of support, right? I mean, you have talent, but your ability to express your talent involves finding yourself in situations where you're getting a lot of challenge and a lot of stimulation and you can grow. So when you're starting out, when you leave college, if you go into a work environment, look and listen. You know, so for starters, you were probably hired as a result of an interview process. Now, maybe it's just one person interviewing, that person's now your boss. Well, that person hired you for a reason, right? There were probably other people in the applicant pool, but that person hired you for a reason. So even though that person is your boss, that person can also be a mentor. Now, there are lines and it can get tricky, but you can, over a period of time, sense, is this person really interested in having me ask questions? Is this person putting me in different positions so I can learn different aspects of what it is we do so I can grow? Or is this person giving me the vibe that I'm somehow annoying, right?
Mm-hmm.
So many people are going to be part of a team, right? So you're coming into an organization as the new person. Look around you. You know, coworkers, right? Or people in the next office over. You know, as you're going in, keep your eyes open and begin to look for, okay, this person seems supportive of me. Or we had a meeting and we talked about a lot of things and I said something and this person came in during the discussion and praised and said, hey, you know, Sierra, that's a good idea. Let's follow that up. After the meeting, say, I want to thank you for acknowledging what I said in the meeting, and I'd love any advice you might have, right? Mm-hmm. So it's, again, like some of the other things I've talked about, it's a two-way street. Some people enjoy mentoring. Some people want to be mentors. Other people aren't so interested. So whatever workplace you find yourself in, look for those folks who seem interested in mentoring. And again, buy them lunch, right? You know, most people eat lunch every, right? I mean, or mm-hmm. Get together for coffee or something. And just, you know, show that you appreciate their willingness to help you succeed. But finding mentors is really important.
Oh, that was a really good piece of advice. So thank you, Joe. How have you started your mentoring relationships? Like maybe one or two of your closest either mentees or mentors. How has that relationship helped you throughout the years?
Well, in many workplaces, there are limited resources. And so you just look for ways to get more out of the resources you have by collaborating with others. Now, sometimes that can be difficult, right? Because you get into the frenemy situation,
mm-hmm.
right? And so you say, hey, you know what? You've got a project and I've got a project. They're limited resources. We could each try and get all the resources for what we're trying to do, in which case it's a winner. It's a coin flip. One of us will win, the other will lose. Or if we develop a collaborative project, we're both much more likely to get most of the funding we want. We can both be successful if we do that. So it's like looking for allies. Looking for allies. And again, every organization is going to be, if you're in a really, really small shop, the dynamics are going to be different than if you're in a huge corporation. But looking around your workspace and finding people who are allies. So this is going to sound really, really goofy. But I think most of what you need to know, you learned in kindergarten, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you want to make friends, bring something. If you approach someone you hope will be your mentor, and all you're bringing is, hey, you need to give me advice, that's kind of risky.
Mm-hmm.
But if you approach it in, hey, is there anything I can do to help your team be successful? Now, a lot of people are going to say, huh, okay, well, yeah, let's talk. I think there are some things you can do, right? So in other words, if you're bringing willingness to help the other person succeed, they're more likely to want to try to help you succeed. It's like you're in kindergarten. You want to play with that other kid's toy? You can either go and take the toy, or you can offer to trade your toy for his or her toy.
Mm-hmm. Pretty simple.
I think sometimes it's overly, we make it more complicated than it is.
Mm-hmm.
In any organization, you can't have too many friends. And so if you're approaching someone who's in a superior position, you know, you can flatter them. I mean, people like to be flattered, but you can also say, listen, how can I help? Is there anything I can do so that my unit can facilitate your unit, and then the whole organization thrives.
Mm-hmm.
Look for allies. If you look for allies, you're more likely to find mentors.
Huh. I love that. It made me think of a saying that I've heard where common theory or common sense is not always common practice.
So I'm an historian, and I work on largely the 17th century.
Mm-hmm.
There was a philosopher who came to be quite prominent, René Descartes. In one of his works of philosophy, he begins by saying, common sense is the most evenly distributed thing in the world, because no one, even the person who seems really hard to please, no one will ever admit they don't have enough of it. Obviously, that was an attempt at 17th century humor. But the mm-hmm. point is, everybody thinks they've got common sense. In fact, they don't. There's a lack of common sense. I mean, people are always doing things that undermine their own goals. So that's a tricky thing. Common sense should be common, but I think it's fairly uncommon, actually.
Yep. I can agree with you there. I've noticed even myself, looking back on things, I've looked back on my freshman year a lot the past week or so, and I just have to laugh at myself. I'm like, where was the common sense in that, you know?
Well, I know that this is hard, but I think especially coming out of this last year, I'm so proud of all the students who've persisted, shown the determination and grit to just keep going despite the incredible obstacles. And the same is true for the faculty and the staff. I mean, I'm really incredibly impressed at how folks have found ways to keep going. But we found ways to keep going because we've helped each other, right? That there's been an acknowledgement, hey, we're all in this crisis. We're all dealing with these challenges. Let's help each other through it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if there's a terrible storm and you see neighbors who may not even spend a lot of time hanging out together, but they're helping each other shovel the sidewalk and clear their driveways, right? There's that sense that we're facing something that's much bigger than ourselves. I just wish the pandemic's been it's been horrible. There's no silver lining in it. But I hope as we go forward, we can hold on to the fact that, you know, let's be kind to each other.
Yeah.
Right? That person at the grocery store, the bus driver, right? Or the person who helps you with your car. That extra half second to say thank you like you really mean it, it makes a difference. It really does. So just as we need to be kind to other people, we also have to be kind to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And like common sense, I don't think there's enough of that. I think that a lot of folks are really harsh with themselves. They have expectations that I don't think are always reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't meet this particular goal that somebody else set for them, then they get really down on themselves. So kindness and patience, those are the two things that we've needed the most. They're finite resources. But just as we have to express kindness and patience with the people in our lives, we also have to be kind and patient with ourselves. So you're a senior, you look back at your freshman year, and what's the difference? You learn stuff.
I did.
You learn stuff. You can't go back in time and fix it. Some of these lessons, unfortunately, you have to learn through experience. But, you know, very, very few, I've not met anyone, maybe this is true for you. I think very, very few people remember what it was like to be a year old, year and a half old, okay? For quite a few folks, that's around the time when you start to learn how to walk. Well, what does learning how to walk look like? It looks like you're falling down a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So do we look, when we see a video, or maybe you have somebody in your life who's at that stage, when we see somebody trying to learn how to walk, do we laugh at them? Do we make fun of them? Do we criticize them? Why are you falling down all the time? No, because we understand that's a particular aspect of being a little kid. And they're sort of cute when they're like that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why can't your 22-year-old self look at your 18-year-old self and say, wow, you know, you fell down a lot, but that was part of being 18.
Yeah.
That was part of that. You know, that was part of being 18. Growth.
Yeah.
Growth. It involves Band-Aids.
It does. I've definitely noticed that, too. That's kind of where I found myself during this pandemic, is a lot of self-reflection and a lot of realizing like how hard you can be on yourself and how easy it is to sweep it under the rug when you have such a busy schedule that I don't know if you did before the pandemic, but I was definitely running around all the time.
Yeah, it's been hard, you know, and one of the things, and I've said this to my supervisors, that I just can't shake this feeling that I'm operating at some, I don't know, 70% level of my normal capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's taken a toll, right? Because things aren't as far along as I hoped they would be. And various projects had to be put on, you know, on a slower pace for a while. And I find that really frustrating, right? But at the same time, it's not reasonable to expect that a pandemic is not going to cause us to change our plans.
Yep.
Right? So there's a lot of there's a lot of frustration I think folks are feeling because has it been quote unquote a lost year? You know, in some ways we didn't meet our goals. But in other ways, we proved to ourselves that we're capable of doing incredible things.
Mm-hmm.
Like the university kind of reinvented itself.
Yes.
On the fly. And the students and the staff and the faculty were incredible in their ability to do that. So maybe our original plan a year ago wasn't, hey, let's reinvent the way we do things. All right? We had these other plans that proved too hard to do. But let's give ourselves a little credit for what we did do that was unexpected a year ago.
Mm-hmm. I know the same thing has definitely happened me personally in my classes. I'm like, wow, I was doing so much more like before the pandemic. Why am I not getting my homework done as soon as I was hoping or doing as good of a job on all of my projects? And it's like, well, there's a lot of stress going on, even though it's not as in the face as like all of these events that you have to plan and all these goals you need to hit and financial things that you need to cap. But like the mental toll that it's taken on a lot of people has brought a lot of us down to 70%, sometimes lower. And for me, I'd had to take a step back. I had a review with my advisor for Aggie Radio, and we were looking at numbers, and he said, you maintained the attendance and the listenership of the studio, which in a pandemic, like, you should pat yourself on the back for. It might not seem like a lot, but you did really well.
Yeah, flat is the new up.
Yep.
Flat is the new up. And I as we go forward, and we're not out of it all the way yet, but we definitely are seeing hopeful signs. I'll share with you that I had my Johnson & Johnson shot a week ago.
Oh, congrats.
And that's the one-shot vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe it. I mean, I just can't believe it got here so quickly. And I feel incredibly fortunate and privileged to have been able to sign up for it and get myself to the hospital and get the shot. But it's a hopeful sign. But I think we also have to allow ourselves a chance to breathe and to recognize that we got through this.
Mm-hmm. It's been really interesting. Looking back, it's been a year ago this week.
Yep.
And really taking that step back and realizing, like, it's been a really long year.
Yeah, and you know, when I'm feeling like I'm just kind of a little brain dead, which happens more frequently than I'd like, one of my pick me ups, watch the last 30 seconds of that basketball game a year ago and watch Sam Merrill hit that shot.
Yeah.
Cannot watch that too many times. But it's just like, you know, talk about unexpected and exciting and all those things and stepping up in the moment. You know, that was part of the last year, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm convinced that the Aggies would have won the NCAA tournament if they'd had it. So I think we should put a banner in the spectrum. But that's just me.
Yep. I'm with you on that one. Yeah, that was an astonishing shot.
We tied for the national championship.
Yep.
With 63 other teams. But come on.
Yep.
Co-national champions.
Yep. There you go. Exactly. We survived COVID and we did it well.
Yes.
And we had a really good team doing it.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Joe. I've just got two more questions.
Sure.
The first I ask everyone is, what would you tell your younger self?
It gets better. You know, that it's what we were talking about a few minutes ago, about how you can't speed up the growing process. And life is going to be difficult. And don't get me wrong. When I say it gets better, it's not because everything's going to work out great the way you want it to. There are so many things that don't work out the way you want them to. But what I meant by it gets better is, I think you get a sense of perspective on things. And you begin to understand that some of the goals you had when you were a little kid didn't pan out.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are other things you never imagined being possible that end up happening. So be patient and be kind to yourself and just keep going. That would be my main message.
Oh, thank you. If listeners have questions, where can they find you at?
I have an email address that's pretty straightforward. So it's joe.ward at usu.edu. I'd be happy to hear from folks.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Joe, for coming on.
All right. Thank you for inviting me.
Hey, it's Sierra, and I hope you enjoyed that episode. I hope it led you to a more positive mindset, a more defined view of leadership, and some action items to take along with you. For more information, you can check out the Moxie website at themoxiemindset.org. Thanks for tuning in today, and I'll see you next week on The Moxie Mindset.